Magi, the ancestral, present, and future territory of the Mi'kmaq people. We are gathered today as part of the Living Peace and Friendship Treaties signed between the British and the Mi'kma'ki, and these treaties hold the ongoing shared responsibility to respect, cooperate, and coexist with each other on this land, which we do. Welcome, everyone. You have an agenda. Meeting will be called to order, and that agenda that was sent to you via email. Is there anything that you would like to amend or add to the agenda? And then would have somebody make a motion to approve the agenda. Any amendments?
You sent out one new piece, didn't you, Angela?
Can you repeat that, Alan? Sorry.
I thought you sent out one new item here earlier today or yesterday or something.
Yes, Joanne added the response letter from Lunenburg County Search and Rescue.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So that is on the agenda. Entertain a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
So moved.
Do we have a seconder?
I don't know who you had for the first.
I'll second that. I think Mayor Getson made the motion.
I haven't got all the faces on here, so you'll have to identify yourself. So moved and seconded on the question. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. Let's go to the minutes of the meeting of January the 17th. Again, circulated. What is your wish?
Move they be accepted as circulated.
Thank you, Councillor Carver. Do we have a seconder?
Deputy Mayor Moore.
Okay, Deputy Mayor Moore seconds it. You've heard the motion on the question. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is carried. We have a presentation. This is 4.1 on your agenda from the Nova Scotia Public Safety Field Communications Group on Trunk Mobile Radios.
Thanks, David. I'd like to introduce Scott Hawks, who's the supervisor, and Matt Boyle, who's the director. They're going to give a bit of an overview of the TMR system, so the Trunk Mobile Radio System. This is what the fire departments use, search and rescue, EMO, all of our mutual aid partners. So they're going to give a bit of an overview and background as to how we use it and what we use. Feel free to go ahead.
Yeah.
Can't hear them.
No, can't see them or hear them.
No.
Now, just use the other one there.
All right, we've got a separate mic here we're trying now. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Perfect. So I'm Scott Hawks, and as Angela said, I'm the supervisor of field operations and client relations with Public Safety and Field Communications. And
Scott, if I could interrupt for one second.
Certainly.
We're not seeing anything other than the front page of your presentation in a very small block. Do you have control of the screen?
I do not. Unless it's sharing this screen instead of that screen.
Give us a moment and we'll try to make it larger.
Technical difficulties. Stand by. Don't adjust
Indeed.
Your set.
No. I don't touch any buttons.
Been standing by for 2 years, Scott.
2 years? Well, that's not bad. I just have to get your log into your internet here. So which Wi-Fi connection do I use? The public, council?
Which Wi-Fi? Oh, yeah, 21.
No.
We're working on it, everybody. We did a test, okay. But it works internally and not on Teams, so we're just getting there. So just bear with us, please.
I'm just going to find the team. Mm-hmm.
Happy belated birthday, Floyd.
I'm sorry, I'm muted. Thank you very much. Getting old. Mm-hmm. I like to forget him, but I can't.
COVID has made us all old.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're only as old as you think you are, and if you can't think, you're not old.
Okay, I'm a good then. I'm still a young kid.
They're getting closer.
Yeah.
Scott, that's coming through in presentation mode rather than full screen mode.
Yeah, we're struggling here with this. I had a test that everything was working.
You have to go through these ones.
It's not there, so.
Try it again.
What if I share a different screen? That might work. How about that?
It's because of this system.
There.
That's better.
There we go.
Almost, anyway.
Or did I just mess it up again?
Got it there right now.
Let's see if it works.
Showing slide 1 of 23.
Thanks, David.
First of 200 slides. It doesn't seem to be changing when I go to the screen, though. Like I'm on a different slide here, but it doesn't come up there. If you can advance them, that would be good. Yep, and I have, unfortunately, the way I have it set up, each text comes up with a separate press. So
can they see it?
I can
hopefully
see
they
one.
See. I don't know why the sound's still coming through this. I had it turned off. Okay. We may have a bit of an echo there because my computer, I can't seem to get the audio turned off.
Do you want to email it to me or Joanne?
It's huge. It's got a lot of pictures in it, so... Well, let's give it a try, see how it works, if you want to advance. Oh, did you? And, yeah, I can't seem to get rid of the other sounds. Oh, dear. If I had a memory stick, I could dump it onto yours real quick.
Scott, it seems like it would work okay here.
Matt, what if you try to share it from your computer?
Well, if I move the slide, can you see it?
No.
What if I hit sync to presenter?
I think it's the way I'm sharing.
I see. Yeah, is it on the share drive somewhere that I can share it from?
I saved it to your folder. I can do it again because I know we made a couple minor changes this morning.
Sure.
If folks are in the same room with each other, then you should turn the speakers off on your own laptop.
While we do this in the background, I can move on to number five while Scott downloads it and then gives it to Joanne if we want to do that so that we're not wasting time.
I think that's a good idea, Angela.
Okay, wonderful. So business arising from minutes is number five. So the emergency management bylaws, the five units were at various different stages of completion on that. And some have already been sent to the province. Others are being worked on. The province can't send them back to any of the municipal units until they receive all five because our intermunicipal services agreement states that they need to be the same. So we are still working on it. I know some of the units have asked me for the status of it. So once all five have all been submitted to the province, we'll get the review and they'll be sent back. 5.2 is the Remo Planning Committee. We had the Planning Committee last month. It was a great success. We had almost 100% attendance by all of the organizations. We did a hybrid, and it was, I think it went well for the first one that we had, and really good feedback from all of the external organizations that we had. I think it'll be really good getting the input from everybody and all of us working together. Some people had known each other, others hadn't. So just even to get everybody on the same page is really great. So that's the update for that. 5.3 was the budget approvals. All budget approvals have come in, and so the Remo budget has been approved. That's everything on 5. Joanne's just still working on the presentation.
I've unplugged, so I'm not sure where that's coming from anymore.
Oh, interesting. I'll move on to the Nova Scotia EMO updates. Andrew, do you have any updates for Nova Scotia EMO? Section 7.
I do.
Item 7.
You can hear me okay?
Yep, go ahead.
Perfect. Awesome. Good afternoon, everyone. First, I guess I'll start by just kudos to Angela and your group for the great work that was done with the planning committee. As Angela mentioned, the attendance was overwhelming, almost 100%, which is excellent, especially for a first meeting. It's very good to see, and so kudos to you and your group for that. As far as an update for me, I guess no meeting is the correct meeting unless we start with COVID. The last couple of years, now hopefully we're on our way out of that. But in regards to COVID, we're still providing personal protective equipment for fire agencies, as well as we recently deployed some rapid test kits for those fire agencies, and just last week some for the municipal units as well. A little bit of celebratory note: the state of emergency ended this Saturday night as of midnight, which is the longest state of emergency ever in the history of this province. So it was good to see it come to an end, and hopefully, good news that it stays that way. So as COVID restrictions start to relax, we're preparing to move forward with what we call our old normal business of getting back to some face-to-face meetings, as well as a good complement of training and exercising that we have planned for this year. I won't go through all the training and exercises that we have planned for Lunenburg County or the areas that surround it, but we have also established some priorities for the 22-23 year with each Remo group. And, we're going to start this week on Wednesday with a basic emergency management course for the Lunenburg Remo. And next month, we'll move into delivery of an incident command systems level 200 course. And then over the time between now and the end of the fiscal, I've committed to working with Angela on a good thorough hazard risk and vulnerability assessment, which I'm really looking forward to carrying out. So that's it for me, Angela, unless there's any questions.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson has a question for you.
So those Remo courses that you're talking about starting in Lunenburg, those are for who?
Mainly they're for, it depends on which course it is. It's generally for the AEC CAOs and planning committee. Some firefighters have asked about it as well as police. So it really depends, but generally that's who it's for. Is there one that you're specifically thinking of taking?
But I just wondered if they were shared out, who was supposed to be going to them?
Oh, yeah. The CAOs have shared. I've shared. Yeah, it's been shared to the planning committee. Yes. Yeah. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Angela.
It looks like we're ready for Scott and Matt's presentation. Thanks, everybody, for their patience. And we'll start it again.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for having us as well. We're happy to be here, and I'm really impressed with your new facility. I was seeing it being built and was kind of happy to get inside. See the radio room, of course. We had to check out the radio room, which is looking good. Al Siples made sure that Angela knew that I had to see that before I got out of here. So it looks good, Matt. You missed it. You didn't get to come in person and see that one. But my job is to be a middle person between any organizations using TMR and our vendor, Bell, who runs the system, and kind of work with all the various players. Plus, I also supervise our mobile communication support program that goes out to emergencies or planned events to supply communication support. We'll talk more about that later in the presentation, but to start out, based on what Angela and I spoke about for the presentation today, we're going to give you kind of a high level of how does this TMR system work, and where does Bell fit into this, and where do we fit in it, and so on and so forth. So I'm going to turn it over to Matt to take that first part, and then I'll jump in a little bit later.
Thanks, Scott. Good afternoon, everyone. So I'm Matt Boyle, Director in Public Safety and Field Communications, and we're located currently in the Department of Service Nova Scotia and Internal Services, which provides a lot of the internal services to other parts of government, as well as, of course, access centers and land registries and other things that you would be familiar with. PSFC, Public Safety Field Communications, looks after a number of networks. So first and primarily is the Trunked Mobile Radio Network, which is a managed service contract with Bell Mobility as the provider. And that's tied together with counterpart networks in the provinces of New Brunswick and Prince Edward Island as well to form one large regional maritime-wide radio network for public safety users. Our office manages a 24/7 dispatch center known as Shubi Radio, located in Shubenacadie, that dispatches for a number of provincial government departments and also provides support to some municipalities, EMO, Ground Search and Rescue, and a number of others. And we also have a 24/7 mobile communications support group that can respond out to field emergencies and planned events to provide equipment and advice and so on. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the presentation and what that service can offer. So a quick overview of the Trunk Mobile Radio Network. As I mentioned, you can see it spans the three maritime provinces with quite a number of towers. So we're at 99 towers in Nova Scotia, 16 in Prince Edward Island, and a little over 100 in New Brunswick. Their number has been evolving, so they joined the network a little bit after Nova Scotia and PEI did. So their number of towers has been gradually increasing, and they're just somewhere just up over 100 now.
What are the red dots?
So the province of New Brunswick, this is actually three maps that are combined, and the province of New Brunswick just denotes their sites a little bit differently. So within the network, the towers that make up the network, some are owned by governments of the provinces and some are owned by Bell. And so in New Brunswick, the red versus the blue denotes provincially owned towers versus Bell owned towers. We have a similar mix in Nova Scotia, but our map just doesn't happen to denote the difference. So effectively, whether it's a government tower or a Bell-owned tower, it's providing the same service to the users. It's just the way that they've built their map. And so all of those sites are connected together to make one large regional network. So a public safety user can effectively go anywhere in the maritime region and enjoy the same level of radio service. The system is administered by Bell Mobility, so it's a managed service contract. Each of the three provinces represents what we call the anchor tenant or the most substantial tenant in their province, and effectively the provinces were the ones that contracted Bell to build the network, and then others have come on the network. So we have volunteer programs to support the volunteer public safety community. We have lots of the municipalities, big and small, that have come on through separate contracts with Bell, and also many federal government users have come on the network as well through separate contracts with Bell. And those contracts are all tied together through some common governance mechanisms. All the sites connect back to a central controller that's located at North Street in Halifax. So that will be all the sites in Nova Scotia and Prince Edward Island. And then all of the sites in New Brunswick go back to a controller in St. John, and those two systems are connected together. So as I mentioned, the service is provided through a managed service contract. And what that really means is that there are service metrics that Bell has to meet. So every year they are contracted to a 99.95% overall availability for the network as a whole. And then there's also response penalties if any site suffers an outage that would last longer than 8 hours. So the metric is for them to be on site in 4 hours and have a site repaired within 4 hours in the event of an outage. So some fairly strict service metrics, and each of those does come with a financial penalty. So if they miss the metric, and the further that they miss the metric, the larger the penalty becomes. So another piece of the puzzle here is the Bell Central offices. So that can be anything from a building in a community that's providing a lot of the network switching to, in some cases, just the small roadside boxes that you would see along the side of a highway. And so those require power, and they also provide part of the transport network. So the network is largely connected through the fiber optic network and some wireless connections between sites as well. And so that's all operated, again, by Bell and part of their network. And power is really one of the biggest considerations for keeping this network going. So lots of redundancies in the way the network is designed. For example, every tower site does have, and this is a relatively new development that we've been working towards for a number of years, every site does have a backup generator to ensure the long-term viability of the site in the event of a wide area power outage. And then the network design of the network provides for quite a lot of redundancy. So if a community loses its connection back to the larger Bell network, in many cases, there's an alternate connection which can be used to ensure that the radio system continues functioning. So as the network was developed, one of the investments that the province made, which would be very relevant to this group, would be the what we called the seeding program. And so that was our attempt to provide a limited but functional number of radios out to groups that might not otherwise have immediately become part of the trunk mobile radio environment. Of course, compared to traditional radio systems that would have existed over the decades, the radios that are required to operate on this system are fairly expensive, and there are monthly service fees from Bell. So in order to make sure that some of the volunteer and municipal organizations were able to take advantage of this network and have interoperability or the ability to communicate with the other first responders and public safety users, the province ceded a number of radios out to organizations such as volunteer fire departments, ground search and rescue, and municipal EMO. And many of those organizations have taken our seeded radios and found them to be quite useful, and then in fact gone out and bought additional radios on top of what the province provided. So in a sense, we call it the seeded radio program, really, because it was intended to lead to the spread of this service. And so largely that is what's happened in the volunteer community and with municipal EMO. So systems that are managed by our office, and as I mentioned, there are a number of them. So, of course, TMR was first and foremost because that is our flagship network. But we do still maintain what's something called the Nova Scotia Integrated Mobile Radio System. And that's something that would have existed from around 1980 until early 2000s. That would have been the primary use system for government departments and public safety through the 80s and 90s. And eventually it was largely replaced by TMR, but there are some components of that network that are still owned and maintained by the province. And largely those are used for volunteer fire departments that haven't fully migrated to TMR2, of which there are many. So the system can provide paging and what we call VHF communications, conventional radio communications, for those volunteer fire departments. Ground search and rescue does make some use of this older system as well. And it also serves as a backup to TMR. So in the event we did have a wider scale TMR outage due to some sort of failure or natural disaster, this older network is completely independent of Bell, and so it can continue to operate as a backup to TMR as well. And so again, this would largely be the agencies that are part of the seeded radio program because they have a limited number of TMR radios and haven't been fully migrated to the network. We continue to maintain this legacy network for their use. So as I said, this system's used for paging and operations. It is connected by microwave radio, which is basically wireless links between the dispatch centers and the sites themselves. And so that is completely independent of any telecom provider. It's a linking system that the province owns and operates. And so even if commercial telecom facilities across the province have largely failed, this network is expected to continue working. So high reliability services, equipment is fairly new and modernized, so we're not still running the same equipment that would have been there in the 80s and 90s. For the parts of the network that remain, we have been continuing to support that and modernize. And again, just to note, a little difference than TMR, so no charge to volunteers for use of this equipment and these tower sites. We also have a program called NSSATCOM, which is our satellite communications program. So our office has provided satellite phones to key players across the province, such as municipal EMO groups, ground search and rescue, and key government officials, for example, as a last resort communication strategy. So while radio systems provide for wide area communications to large groups of people at once, a satellite phone is a little bit more limited, just like a telephone call. It's really one person to one person, but it does form sort of a last resort communication strategy. So if radio and cellular and everything else, even landlines have failed, then we do have about 160 satellite phones spread across the province that could allow for some communication back and forth amongst key players. Each ground search and rescue team has two satellite phones, and each municipal EMO has one as well. And then I mentioned a number of other government officials do have access to those. And our mobile communication support vehicles also carry extra satellite phones. So if there was an incident or a telecom outage, we have additional that we can deploy.
I guess that's where I'm going to jump back in again. Thanks, Matt, for that.
Yep.
Do we want to take questions as we go along or hold them till the end? As we go along?
I did have another question in relation to the TMR radios, and that is what percentage of the fire departments in our districts are using TMR?
I don't know that we would have an actual figure of that. I think most use them for some of their operation, but not fully. It's a real mix. Like, they have the opportunity.
Is that a cost thing?
It could be, or it could be that they're just happy with the way their VHF works. That's what, you know, I'm in the fire department in North Queens, and we have enough TMRs that we could run our service off of that, but we still use VHF because we got really good coverage on our VHF. We just use our TMR to talk to other partners or to dispatch, and we found that that works well for us. We could move to TMR if we wanted to. But right now, all of our VHF equipment is paid for, so there was no need to, you know.
So they're either on VHF or they're on TMR?
I think we find most are both, for the most part. You know, we're seeing more and more departments using TMR more often. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, Scott, I think the biggest reason that they're not using TMR is because there's no ability to page departments out, or there wasn't at my last time when I was chief.
No.
Has that changed yet?
No, it hasn't. There is and there isn't. That's the easy, not the easy answer, that's the true answer is that you can do it, but it would take a big investment to build out the network to allow for that paging capability. I was down in Pennsylvania on a bus tour with fire department, which some of your members used to go to, and we were in a county there where the county did paging over the TMR network, but they have a paging receiver or transmitter at every tower site on the network just to be dedicated for that. And in a county situation, it was doable, but for a province-wide, it would be quite costly. You can buy what they call P25 pagers for this network, but it's the infrastructure to make it all come together to do it. But yeah, you're right. You know, one of the reasons, like even in my own department, is if someone in my department talks on the VHF radio, I can hear it on my pager.
Yes.
So that's really a big plus for a lot of departments.
So I can never figure out why they wouldn't advance paging to TMR. That would ensure that all for the fire service or any service get your pager tones that way.
Yeah, I mean, Matt certainly can chime in here. I mean, first of all, for companies like Bell, they have to find, is there a market for it? Is there enough to really make it a go? And, you know, is a desire there by the players to actually want it? I mean, I think evolution is telling us that that's where it's going to go. It's just how soon. Anything you wanted to add on that, Matt?
Well,
Well, and really, just then in that sense, it does come back to a cost issue because the pagers are more expensive that work through the TMR system. And then there's a big upfront investment, as you said, Scott, to upgrade the infrastructure to be able to handle that paging traffic. So in some areas of the province, that would be more palatable. And in other areas, it would be hard for departments or counties to absorb the additional cost around that. So at this point, we've seen interest in it, but we haven't seen enough of a market built up that would justify the investments at this point.
So you're saying the current system doesn't have the capacity to handle all the fire departments if they were to go to TMR?
For paging. If the department chose to move operations to the TMR, then the system would be fairly well able to handle that. But from the paging perspective, that's the infrastructure for that is a little bit different, and that's where the challenge would come in.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, but that's why you need the two systems, and we'll need the two systems for quite a while.
Yeah, yes. I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. I think when we came into TMR1 back in 2001, you saw very little use for TMR at the starting of that program, very little at all, because there wasn't many radios. And then when we went into TMR2, we gave a lot more radios to the fire service. Now we're seeing the shift, which I expected, where a lot of people were using VHF with TMR being a little bit on the side. Now we're starting to see a lot of them being using TMR a lot more and VHF kind of still there for the paging and other things like that. I mean, the nice thing about it is the seamless roaming. You can turn on a radio here at the council chambers and drive to Halifax or go to the valley and still be in contact no matter where you go. You can go to Bathurst, New Brunswick. You can go to Charlottetown. The system has that capability, which is great. Anything else before we move on to the players that are on the system?
No.
I'd just like to agree, Scott. I think the cost is prohibitive in a lot of cases for to go fully TMR.
Yeah.
I know we use a very good combination of both, usually TMR for communicating with our dispatch and if we're a distance away. But as far as local communications go, we usually stick with the VHF and with the paging that way.
Yeah, we're still seeing a lot of that happening. And we're not in a position where we're trying to convince or force anyone to one technology or the other. We just knew that if you look back when TMR was implemented in 2000, the reason the fire service and others were ceded radios was the government essentially was taking that VHF network away. And we got to give you something to allow you interoperability with the other players that are on this new network. Mm-hmm. So, and that's just evolved from there. And that's kind of a nice segue into who can we communicate with on this network. And some of the things that most Nova Scotians don't realize is that in Nova Scotia, and now PEI in New Brunswick, who followed our lead, we're the most radio interoperable place in North America. There is nowhere else that has the level of players on the same system that can all talk to one another on shared talk groups or channels that you don't see anywhere else in North America. So, you know, you think, well, no, there's probably places in the United States, and you start doing the research, and they're not there. And plus, most places would be a single state or single province. We now have it spanning three provinces. Plus, we have a link now that we can link into the state of Maine right from our dispatch center in Shoeby. So if we had something happen in the Bay of Fundy or off the coast of Yarmouth, we can actually link responders from the state of Maine into our network. And they can, in turn, connect it into New Hampshire. So, I mean, we really have a wide network that most are pretty envious of. And great working relationships with all those partners. And that's the key thing, and I see that from being the liaison person. Relationships are everything. To get to know someone and make a relationship and try to work out a policy or a procedure, it makes life a whole lot easier. So I spend a lot of my time just meeting with agencies and trying to help them find better ways to do things. So everyone I'm going to talk about here in the next few minutes are on this system and share the same talk groups as everyone else. So if we went in that radio room, turned on the TMR radio, you're going to see a suite of channels called Mutual Aid 1 through 8. You're going to see Common 1 and 2. That's in every radio in Nova Scotia. Common 1 and 2 are also in every radio in the Maritimes. So there's no having someone arrive here from, like we had in 2016, we had firefighters from New Brunswick come in to help us fight forest fires. We had firefighters from PEI, and they could have brought their own equipment. We just moved to a common channel that they have, and away we go. So those are kind of unheard of in other jurisdictions, and we're quite proud of that. It's taken a lot of work. It's one thing to say you have the ability to do it because the technology has it. It's getting the people to use it and the policies in place to make it work. And I think we're there now. We're really, really good with interoperability, and the earlier the better. Like as a fire department's leaving their station, talking to the paramedics, talking to the RCMP, sharing information while you're on your way to that scene. So the players that we have here in Nova Scotia are all of our provincial government departments, whether it be Natural Resources and Renewables, Department of Public Works, the Transportation Department, Sheriffs, Vehicle Compliance, Motor Carriers, the Correctional Facilities, you name it. All provincial users are on the system as well. The H Division RCMP, the full members of the force, if you want to advance. Our larger municipalities, Halifax Regional, has their police, fire. They have a number of other smaller groups. They're some of their transit supervisors and other groups there as well. Cape Breton Regional Municipality, the CBRM Fire Service, as well as the CBRM Police. EHS, so we have our complete ambulance service in the province who have actually just upgraded their radios to not only be on the service but also for their day-to-day communications. They've just moved that to encryption, the same as police, so they can talk more freely on the air about things and not compromise the public or compromise the patient confidentiality of saying something in an open air where Scannerland could hear them. Federal departments, that's another big player for us. So we have Parks Canada in the Highlands and in Kedgy National Park. We've got the Coast Guard. We've got Fisheries and Oceans, Gulf and Maritime branches. We've got the Canadian, what used to be known as the Canadian Wildlife Service and the Canadian Environmental Enforcement Officer Groups. I'm just going by memory here. The Canadian Border Service Agency officers, they're all sharing the system with us. If you want to advance for me. All of the volunteer fire departments, we've seeded enough radios that we know that pretty much every fire truck in Nova Scotia at a minimum has a mobile radio in it and at least four portables. So that's nice to know to have that, along with ground search and rescue and our municipal EMO partners like yourselves, if you want to advance. So other players that are maybe not your non-traditional group, if you want to maybe advance. The airport, Halifax Stanfield Fire Department at the airport and Halifax Airport Security are on TMR. The McCurdy, Douglas McCurdy Airport in Sydney, their fire department at the airport has TMR. Things like the Confederation Bridge, Halifax Harbour Bridges at their dispatch points, they have TMR. The Highway 104 Cobequid Toll Plaza, Michelin Tire here in Bridgewater, Waterville and Granton each have TMR for interoperability, and Maritimes Northeast Pipeline, and so on and so forth. You don't have to try to read this list, but this is sort of a list of everybody that's on the system, right down to people that you may not even know are there, like, did you know that the railway have a police department? CN Police have a police officer in Halifax. Has a marked police car, is on the TMR system. Go ahead.
So Michelin would be in here because of the fire department?
Yeah, their emergency response group with Michelin ERT group. So they, if, say, Bridgewater Fire had to go in and work with them, or, you know, bigger, it could be Mahone Bay or anybody coming in, and they have the ability to talk to them, or medical emergency or whatever the case may be. But, yeah, that's kind of a big list of it there. And then add on to that all players in New Brunswick and all players in PEI that we can talk to. And, of course, Maine through a link. So the tools that allow us that interoperability are, there's as it says here, 13,000 radios across the province. And the following groups have, or all the earlier groups have, the eight mutual aid talk groups that are province or maritime-wide, two maritime common talk groups that are in every radio in the Maritimes. And then if we're just on scene and we're in a poor coverage area or the system's really busy, we've got three channels that are like walkie-talkies that you can just talk without the network and still have interoperability at your site. Everybody has those. We've enhanced things for law enforcement over the last number of years. When we moved to TMR2, we created a bank of six talk groups just for law enforcement that wouldn't be in anybody else's radios except police agencies. So we've got law 1 through 6. Three of those are encrypted. Three of them are not encrypted. Now we could probably, if we had to do it over again, we would only do encrypted because all of our municipal police partners, including Bridgewater Police, are now fully encrypted. So when you have an incident, you're not having to worry about the bad guy being down in the woods with a scanner app on his phone listening to what's going on. We're very secure in that regard. So the other thing is we've created three maritime law talk groups that are in every police agency's radios in the Maritimes. So if we look back at the Fredericton police shootings, there were police officers from Nova Scotia that went up to give them a hand days after, Halifax Police, there was some RCMP, there were other police departments within the Maritimes that came in. No one had to use different police, didn't have to use Fredericton police cars or Fredericton's radios. You could bring in your own patrol car, use a maritime law talk group, talk to the Fredericton dispatch, and away you go. Another good news story from that one is that Halifax Regional Dispatch actually went up and filled the dispatcher's chairs the day of the funeral and other things. They were familiar with their CAD and the 911 system. They just kept one supervisor back in the room, and Halifax Regional actually dispatched for them because we're getting more and more interoperable with the way we do business. So that was a real plus for that one. So the encryption we have out there today, it's a very advanced encryption system that's done over the air, like your radio. Once it gets its initial loading of encryption, every month the encryption gets rolled in the radio to a new set of keys. So we're probably way ahead of most places with encryption. In fact, when we first got the key management facility, we bought it, and the Motorola people said that we actually would be more secure than some FBI operations in the United States, which was kind of neat to hear that, you know, the system had the capability, why not do it? That's how we looked at it. So rolling our keys every month is something that most groups only do maybe once a year or every 6 months. So some of the highlights of what TMR has made a difference on, right here in our own backyard, which we remember very well, the manhunt for the gentleman, the person that stabbed the Bridgewater police officer, that went on for days. That was on a shared law talk group where we had Kenfield Police, Bridgewater Police, the RCMP, Halifax Regional Police. Everyone was able to talk without sharing equipment. It was right there. Back at this time, the only downside of that was Bridgewater Police were not encrypted, so they had to guard their communications a little bit, but since then have become fully encrypted. Every municipal police force now in the province is encrypted. We've actually also evergreened the radios for our Sheriff's Department to have them fully encrypted. We're doing the corrections folks now. We did our conservation officers. So we're in a good world with the security for the police officers. It makes their job easier. This was another one that was in the news, search for a suspect at a child abduction in Cape Breton. They had Cape Breton Regional Police, the RCMP. They had the provincial government helicopter involved in the searching. And, again, everybody could talk to everyone on this system. And, I mean, it seems easy. We can say it here, but if you were to go to New Hampshire or you were to go to, say, Quebec, and they wouldn't be able to do these same things that we do at the level that we can do it. So we're pretty proud of that. Want to go to the next one? This was just a general one I had a picture of. You know, our military police in Halifax and Greenwood and Shearwater, they are also integrated into this system. So if anything goes wrong, they're like one big police organization on the radio when the time's needed. We can go to the next one. Common 1 and 2, this was back when, you know, our wonderful thing with COVID, and we had the border checkpoints going on at Amherst and going into New Brunswick. They were able to coordinate that between the two provinces on one talk group for this incident that was also going on at the Confederation Bridge. So there was coordinated communication between everyone. We can go to the next one. Yeah, this was another one where, again, interprovincial, time for Bar Marsh got closed to high-sided vehicles. A truck had blown over. You know, you're able to coordinate it. Another thing is a lot of snowstorms in the winter, being able to coordinate the communication back and forth with diverting people off the 104 highway. And we'll just keep going. Large-scale ground search and rescue events, they're always on an interoperable channel to be able to talk to the Natural Resources helicopter or the RCMP helicopter, RCMP incident commander, our ground search and rescue teams. Ambulance normally will get involved. Sometimes the volunteer fire service gets involved, and it's all coordinated and able to communicate. And we'll go another one. Forest fires are another one where you have the command side of it on a mutual aid talk group. Again, maybe municipal EMO want to be involved to know, hey, is this thing ramping up that we're going to need to do an evacuation? Or if we need to, you're able to come in and coordinate with the players on that. So there was a number of fire departments involved in that one. And this you can just kind of just bump through it. These are just a whole bunch of different things that's happened over the years where we used interoperable talk groups, whether it's searches, propane tank leaks, causeway from the Cape Breton Causeway, coordinating it when they close it to high-sided vehicles, water rescue, forest fires, structure fires, aircraft with multiple patients. Well, that's aircraft crashes or aircraft in a dangerous situation. Even body recoveries, I've been involved in that in my own fire department with EHS and others. And this will be another page of them. You can just carry them, go through. Truckload of propane cylinders on fire in DeBert back a while ago. They were blowing up and kind of made things a little exciting. Ice rescues, all kinds of different things that the interoperability really makes a difference. There's none of this agency one calling their dispatch to call another dispatch to radio out to a car. Where are you? It's me, Wayne, where are you guys? I'm just coming down Dominion Street. Perfect. Turn right at the bottom of Dominion. Otherwise, by the time you relay that message, you could have already missed the road. All right, we'll carry on to the next one. So our mobile communication support, I wanted to bring this up because this is something that some groups don't know about, is what we have the capability of doing with our team. After one of the outages that we had up in New Germany, where there was an extended outage, and we had the New Germany site in site trunking and the Dalhousie site, I went down and met with the fire chief and deputy chief of New Germany just to make them aware if that happened again, that what we have the ability to do. So kind of at the start, there's four of us that do rotations of 24-hour, 7-day-a-week rotation for a week. There's myself, Mark Turner, Scott Fisher, and Paul Maynard. We're all trained to the U.S. Homeland Security's Comm Unit Leader course. We've all been to Maine and taken that. Two of us have been to Maine and taken our Comm Technicians courses. We're all trained up to ICS 400, so we try to fit in to whatever we deal with an organization. We're very sensitive to the ICS stuff because that's become very, very dominant today in the emergency management world especially. So we each do that week of on-call, responsible to ensure comms requests are met. So one of the things that we get called for quite regularly is if we have a situation where a tower gets separated from the network. So we talked about these central offices. In New Germany, which happened twice in New Germany, where in a major power outage, that central office, batteries went dead in it, basically, and it put the two tower sites in site trunking. They're still there and working, but they're not connected back to the rest of the world. It's just a standalone repeater. We're able to, some towers remotely go in by computer and link the tower back to a wide area site, or take one of our trucks in and link it in from the community. So we have a number of ways that we can do that. That's one of our key things that we're able to do, and a lot of it can be done remotely. We can bring in extra radios. We can bring in repeaters. We can bring in, we even have a site on wheels, a TMR, full TMR site on wheels that takes, you know, more than a day to get it up and operational, but Bell has that ready to go, and we can make the call for that if it's a, like the 2016 fires. We brought that into Maitland Bridge and set it up because it was multi-day thing. We can also work with Bell to say this is going to extend on beyond a day. We can ask to add capacity to the tower. So it's an event happening in my home bay and we're getting a bunch of busy signals with everything being managed the best we can. We can get Bell to add capacity to the network kind of in a 24-hour period. There's a lot of different things that we can do. We have two main larger trucks. One has a 56-foot mast on it. The other one has a 47-foot mast that can be raised up when we get to a scene. They have everything from cell phone boosters to TMR digital vehicular repeaters, battery charging. One of our key things that we do when we go to an incident is comm support as far as comm planning. Who needs to talk to who? Let's make sure we have the channel set up to do that. So does everybody need to talk to everybody all the time? No, not necessarily. So let's make sure the right people gets to talk to the right people. We'd liaise with, say, the folks in your radio room here. And maybe the next slide, please. Just watch my time here. Yeah, we're over time. That's good because we're right at the end. so that's just a shot of some of our vehicles. We have three quick response trucks that the duty officers have that can go out, set up something really quick, and then the two larger ones can be brought in. We have some of our equipment kept at Chester Grant, the old DNR office there. We've taken that over for government, and we keep one truck there, and the rest of them are at Miller Lake. But we're hoping to build another garage at Chester Grant to hold the bigger truck, so our bigger garage. So that's a real fast, quick overview of us, what we do. Anything, Matt, you'd like to add before we take final questions?
Just one thing, Scott, I wanted to go back on. Just when you talked about the seated radio program and you mentioned that the seated radios were initially given out because the VHF network was not going to be maintained by the province. And I just wanted to add for clarity there that perspective has evolved over the years. And as we talked about there earlier, there really is dual purpose for the dual networks at this point. So oh, yeah. I just wanted to mention that at this stage, although the seated radio program is there and, you know, will continue in its current form as far as we have visibility to, we also expect our VHF network to continue there. So some fire departments are maintaining their own VHF networks and services separate from the province. And so they are free to do that, of course, and the province will continue to maintain its VHF network for the foreseeable future as well. So just wanted to clarify on that point. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Now we'll take questions from the floor if anyone has any questions. Richard.
Yeah, just a quick question, Scott. I know you were on scene at the forest fire in Chester Basins, yep. As a lot of us were.
Yep.
So basically you respond when you're requested, or
good question.
Were you there because that's where your base was anyway?
Well, that one was kind of that's in our backyard. Like we did, it was literally almost across the road from our base there in Chester mm-hmm. Grant. We went down, and when we got there, we realized this would be a good place for you guys to work out of as a command. So we opened the building up to let mm-hmm. let command in. And then we just gradually got brought into the various things that were going on for comm support. But most times it's requests from the field. So you think you need something, give us a call. Like, again, it's 24/7, and it's one of those things where we might be able to give you the advice over the phone. We may not have to bring a big truck out. It might be, hey, here's what you need to do. But certainly it's just a call to Shuby Radio 24/7, and there'll always be one of us take your call, and whoever is the closest is the way we work it. Whichever guy's the closest will come with a truck or more than one truck if needed. All right. Well, thank you for your time. Sorry about the little mix-up in the front, but hopefully we can do better in the future.
Well, we tested it before, but there's a certain way for us to have to log in via Teams because of the system, but it's all good. We were able to continue on with some of the other bullet points. Thanks very much, Matt and Scott. Really
thank
appreciate
you
coming in.
You're welcome.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Take
care.
Thanks so much.
Enjoy your new facility here, too. I know it's only for the municipality, but everybody's getting the chance to enjoy it.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott. Enjoy your vacation.
That's
it's mine.
Angela's.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Right.
Take care.
Cheers.
All right. If we are ready, we will continue. We're down to 6.1, 2021-22 REMO overview. Angela, anything to add for that?
Yes. Joanne will pull up some slides. It was also sent out in the package. So the first slide is the REMA work plan status. So this is including Hurricane Dorian as well as some of the recommendations. So it just gives a bit of an overview as to where we're at. If anybody has any questions, you can just kind of see the progression. We're still working away at things. With regard to the work plan, some of the highlights of things that were done last fiscal, we've got 18 Comfort Center MOUs signed and interest for two facilities for shelters. We've launched the REMO webpage, so if you haven't been there, it's got a lot of information. I'm getting a lot of feedback from actually public as well as some of our community partners as to the information that's there. So if you haven't checked it out, feel free to do so. The comms team has shared it widely and continues to do so. We've got a great working relationship with the comms for all five. We've worked on the critical infrastructure for all of the municipal units.
Before you leave Comfort Centers?
Yep.
I guess in light of extended periods of time this winter without power, I know the 72-hour thing we're supposed to be able to maintain. When one doesn't have a heating system in their home, 72 hours is much too long.
So the 72 hours is the international standard, but the Comfort Centers actually states that they can open it as they wish.
So I guess have we looked at Comfort Centers geographically, that they actually make sense? I know that we have Comfort Centers, but I know that there are some voids.
Oh, there's a lot of points.
Yes.
Yes.
So
we don't have near.
So should we be reaching out to someone in these areas to try to make sure that our municipalities, I guess, are covered in the event of prolonged periods of no power, which I assume will continue?
Yes. So I have reached out to the municipal units, both through the AECs and CAOs, so that they can know. If anybody wants to know the status of them, if you go onto the website under Comfort Centers, there is an interactive map as well as the list of them. That does get updated when they are open. You can very visibly see where the gaps are. We have reached out to Comfort Centers who have not signed up since a year and a half, 2 years ago, whenever it was. And some of them aren't interested. So they want to do it on their own. And, you know, we can't force anybody to. We obviously would like them to. But some are wishing that they can just do it on their own if they want to. And I know that there are some comfort centers who used to be part of the REMO list and have chosen not to, but have still opened. So, you know, we had made the decision collectively that they're going to be advertised. And if I don't know the information, I can't share it either. Yep,
so
go ahead.
So some of these ones that may not be willing to be a comfort center now, are these ones that the municipalities have invested in with generators?
Some may be, yes.
Okay. I guess so there's no commitment from those individuals when they do this that they will maintain a comfort center or anything for a period of time?
With regard to a commitment, unless they've signed the MOU, they're not part of the REMO. And I've asked several times over the last 2 years, so has the municipal units, and you know, I can't force anybody to sign on. I think that there are definitely areas that need some, and you can, you know, clearly see the gaps if you look on the website where everything is. But you know, the ones that we have to work with are right now, there's 18 of them, yes.
Yeah. Angela, I think what Carolyn is driving at is that we could make funding contingent on being a comfort center, could we not?
Yeah, if so I can, we actually don't give any funding for a comfort center. If that's the way that we want to go, we would need to increase the budget.
I think what she means is municipal funding. Anyway, never mind.
Same. So only, I believe it's only MODL who actually has comfort center grants. Bridgewater doesn't. Mahone Bay does not, I don't think. Lunenburg doesn't.
We
and
don't,
Chester
no.
has a, you know, if there's a need, there might be, you know, a request through a different grant program. But there's not a standard grant program for being a comfort center, no.
And I guess in light of the last 2 years with COVID and fire departments not doing as much that way, but having lots to do. I'm not saying they're not
doing
their
job. Just haven't been able
to, but
yes.
They haven't been, the halls haven't been open to the communities and so on because of COVID.
Yeah.
And I guess, is that going to be the norm as we move forward? And that's, I guess, worries me.
Yes. Understand. I wish I had the crystal ball. Yeah.
Okay. Councillor Carver, you had a question?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to ask the location of the two interesting shelters.
We're having a hard time hearing you.
Oh. Maybe I'll try shouting. Does that help?
Yes. Yep.
What is the location of the two areas that are interested in having a shelter?
The shelter is the NSCC and Forest Heights Community School. Forest Heights Community School.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Angela?
Yes?
On that point of shelters, as many know, Mahone Bay is just building a new fire hall. And it is fully equipped to be a shelter.
Yes.
It has separate showers and everything for the public, so it's fully equipped to be a shelter. So
yes,
that was
that's wonderful.
There.
And I know that Town of Lunenburg has indicated the same, so I just need something signed for both of them. So I don't have it as a comfort center or as a shelter. So yeah, that's, you know, there are some that I'm aware of that are interested. We just don't have anything. So until they're actually listed on the with a MOU, we haven't added them to the list. Yep, that's great. That's great. Penny, did you have another question or is your hand up from previous? Okay, perfect. So I'll continue on along with the highlights. So the critical infrastructure, we have worked with the municipal units to get an updated list of critical infrastructure in the area. Still working on that, but we've gotten a good list as to where we're at so far. We have reintegrated the REMO Planning Committee, and I'll continue to foster that next year. And we've updated the municipal bylaw to match the intermunicipal services agreement. And as I indicated in the front, we've just got two more that have been started and have to just be completed. So we're well on our way for that. That actually will also trigger an increase in our municipal evaluation. If you recall, we were working on some of the steps. So it covers off on a few areas. So the goals for this current fiscal coming up, we'll work on the hazard risk vulnerability assessment. I'll be working with the planning committee on that. Doing public education campaigns and contingency plans. Again, the contingency plans will also be with the planning committee. Fostering the planning committee now that we've got it reinvigorated, and then working on an evacuation plan. Any questions on the work plan status? Next slide.
No.
Okay. So if we go to the next slide, this synopsis of 2021 and 22, we had 11 activations where we consider we were activated either for monitoring, partial, or full. I didn't include COVID nor all of the weather events recently because there have been a lot. So generally 11 plus all of the times that we were doing things for COVID. We've had 11 training and 5 exercises, either here locally or some of our staff have participated to external ones. 3 public education and outreach, mainly limited due to COVID, and I've written 5 articles which have been posted in many of the municipal newsletters. Some of the contributions from myself for on behalf of the units, I'm part of the International Association of Emergency Managers Canada chapter, and within that I'm the Atlantic Region Treasurer. I'm also the 2023 conference manager, so we're working on a conference for next year. I've recently received a Canadian Red Cross designated Distinguished Service Award. I wrote a provincial-wide exercise for them right before COVID, and so that's ready to be used at any point, and they did give me a service award for that. And recently I've been accredited with being a certified emergency manager. It's an international standard, and third person in Nova Scotia and first woman to be accredited. So working well on my way to continue with the progress that we're working here within the municipal units from EM, and just really trying to continue with education and training for the municipal units.
Is the conference a local one?
I'm sorry?
Is the conference the...
Yes, it's going to be in Halifax this
That's
year.
What I wondered.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Who would normally be the attendance on attendees on that conference?
For the conference?
Yes.
Generally, it's emergency managers, but it can be anybody. You know, it's invited to police, fire, ambulance, public, really anybody who wants to. There is a cost for it. Anybody who would like to join. I'll have more details if anybody's interested.
Well, just before we move on, Angela,
yes.
I would congratulate you on that Distinguished Service Award that the Red Cross has given you. And also your certification as an emergency manager, as it says on the notes, the third person and the first woman to be so accredited. So well done.
Thank you.
We're very fortunate to have you leading the charge for us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So, David, if it's okay, I'll just continue on with the coordinator updates under Section 8.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
So some of the updates since the last meeting. Comfort Center signs have been ordered. Most have agreed that they'll install them on their own once they are delivered. And the few that aren't, once the weather gets better, I'll be making arrangements to get those signs installed. As I indicated, we did have the planning meeting. It was great success. It was a hybrid meeting, and we'll continue along that process. And, really some great support from the external parties that we're going to be working with. May 1st to 7th is Emergency Preparedness Week, and I'm planning a trade fair or touch a truck event on Saturday, May 7th. There will be more details to follow. There will be prizes, barbecue, mascots, and things like that. And we've got quite a bit of interest from our local groups that are interested in it. With regard to that, I did apply for a FireSmart grant, and we have received $500 to go toward the event. And I've also received a free Eastlink Community TV episode to be able to promote emergency preparedness as well as the event. So I'm working on that. So we're really making some really great progress here locally within the region. Continuing on with our training and exercises, and we've solidified some dates with Nova Scotia EMO. And last thing, I'm working on some social media campaigns to keep REMO relevant for residents and top of mind so that we can really continue the preparedness aspect for them. It'll be posted on Facebook and Twitter. And once everything is ready, I'll be sharing it with the comms group. So that'll be in the coming months, not a specific date yet. The May 7th event needs to get well on its way before we get to that point. But those are some of the things that I'm working on. That's everything that I have. Any questions?
Great. Questions? I can't see all the faces here, but I'm not seeing any hands up, so.
And nothing internal either.
No, I think we're good to go. Okay. Added items. No? Then the next meeting will be held on Monday, May 16th.
There was one added item, I believe.
Oh, okay.
The ground search and rescue letter.
Oh, that's right, that's right, that's right.
Alex, are you still on? I think he had to go pick up his kids. He was just texting me. He'll be back at 2:50, he said. I can try. I'm just refreshing because Alex was going to take this one. After the meeting, Alice had asked Joanne to write a letter to Ground Search and Rescue with regard to whether or not they had wanted the additional $3,000 that we put into the contingency. The mm-hmm. response that came back was as noted, and at this time they are not looking for the additional funding. So we will continue on. The $3,000 will sit in contingency, and if it's not used for an activation, it'll be provided back similar to the remaining funds at the end of every year. And if they are needing an increase in future years, they will ask at that point. But at this point, they did not need the additional funding they had said.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. We were down to the date of the next meeting. When is Victoria Day, or when is the in May? 16 or 23?
23, I believe.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
I see that. Yes.
Okay, so the 16th at 1:30 p.m., I'll probably try to do an in-person and a video-linked one until we can get the COVID thing resolved.
Yes, I think most of our meetings will continue in hybrid.
Okay. So, anything else? Any other questions or comments?
No.
If not, entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Move, we adjourn. Seconded then.
Seconded by Councillor Now. You heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Nay. No, not a nay in the House when it comes to opposing the motion.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone, for coming out on this kind of a gray day in March, but it's not snowing really and it's not cold. Have a good afternoon.
You too.
Thank you.